Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Florida finally has a state budget deal, although the state's safety net hospitals and their Medicaid patients may not be too happy.
The big number statewide is $520 million being cut from hospitals this year. That's state money and it's federal money.
Also tonight, we'll check out the frantic final hours of the session's 60th day. So many bills on the calendar, but only a comparative handful making it through the process. Meanwhile, a formidable list of major matters from a new gaming agreement to workers' comp reform languished. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the final scheduled day of the legislative session with only a Monday budget passage yet to come. Welcome to Capitol Report. After much wrangling, wringing of hands, and backroom negotiating, the leaders of the Florida House and Senate finally announced an $83 billion state budget compromise last night. The single largest impediment to reaching that compromise was the money the state provides safety net hospitals to cover the cost of providing health care to those on Medicaid or those without any health coverage at all. To find out what happened during that discussion at the highest levels of the legislature, we spoke to Michael Oslin. He's a reporter with the combined Capitol Bureau of the Tampa Bay Times and Miami Herald.
Well, Mike Oslin, here we are at the very end of session. It looked for a while like the budget was on a smooth glide path to the runway, but during the final days of the negotiations between House and Senate, a little thing called medical spending seemed to get in the way. Set this up. What happened there?
Well, in any normal year, the healthcare budget is the most complex and technical chunk of the state's $83 billion, give or take, that they spend. And this particular year, there was pretty much agreement that they were going to do some cuts to Medicaid, but disagreement over just how large those cuts were going to be and exactly how they were going to, you know, take that money out of what the state and federal government give to hospitals. So it was really an in the weeds kind of disagreement, but. You know, it's a large chunk of money that they're talking about, and no one in the legislature wanted to, you know, compromise too much to make it happen.
Was this complicated by the larger discussion of health care that was raging on the national level, do you think?
You know, I don't think that the Affordable Care Act, you know, repeal vote plays into this, but I do think that, you know, we have a new president who's willing to work with states more to set up their Medicaid systems however they want. And so that's very much a part of this discussion. You know, the Trump administration told Florida that it was going to restore this program that could let the state take $1.5 billion in local and federal money to pump into hospitals. And lawmakers saw that and said, well, if we can get this $1.5 billion, then we can cut from other parts of what we give to hospitals and hopefully hold them harmless. I say hopefully because we still don't know exactly what that $1.5 billion will look like or even if it'll be $1.5 billion. But, you know, the broader idea of changing healthcare, yes, that is playing into this, though I don't think Obamacare specifically does.
Now, we look at what finally came out of these negotiations between the House and the Senate in reducing the amount of state aid to safety net hospitals to compensate for the fact that a lot of poor people go to the hospital and they don't have any money to pay for the care that they receive. So bottom line, what were the numbers that came out and how does that impact the amount of federal money that Florida can draw down now from the feds in the form of matching money?
So the big number statewide is $520 million being cut from hospitals this year. And that's state money and it's federal money. And it has the potential to increase next year because of some budget tricks and how they put it together. But here in Tallahassee, that's about $7.4 million, I think, from TMH, which is, you know, a pretty good chunk of change. I mean, not as much as some of the bigger hospitals. You know, you look at places like Jackson Memorial in Miami that take on, you know, so much of the state's Medicaid and charity care populations, people who can't pay for health care. You know, some of these hospitals are really going to be hurting. As I said, though, you know, they might win out after some more negotiations with the federal government, but there's no guarantee there.
And what happens when a poor person goes to the hospital and that amount of money has been cut? Do the safety net hospitals essentially have to eat that, pass it along to their more affluent patients? What happens?
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you talk to the hospitals, you know, they basically tell you, look, we do cost shifting anyway. There are certain procedures that are really expensive or certain people who can't pay. Even when they get paid for Medicaid, they don't get paid quite as much as when someone with private insurance goes to the hospital. And so, you know, I think they're sort of looking at it and saying, well, we're going to have to keep serving people, but we may just have to start charging, you know, other insurance providers a little bit more.
So we now, based on the reconciliation between House and Senate when it comes to hospital spending, the last big sticking point in this whole mess, we have a budget and we're back on the glide path, coming in for a landing Monday afternoon at the Capitol?
Well, yes, unless something crazy happens, and that's been known to happen before. So hopefully they will be, you know, done with the budget on Monday. I should say that we haven't seen the actual budget printed out yet. They're doing technical changes in the Capitol today. And once that, you know, comes out, though, I think it's pretty clear that it'll pass the House and Senate on Monday.
So we can dare to say, sine die, maybe.
Yes, exactly. That's right.
Mike Oslin, reporter with the combined Tampa Bay Times, Miami Herald Bureau here in Tallahassee. Thanks for coming in, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
Still to come on Capitol Report, lawmakers are scrambling to carry the last of their bills across the finish line. Soon they'll return home to their constituents. That knowledge is forcing some last-minute deals and some gut-wrenching decisions.
We simply cannot go home without addressing this life-threatening, life-taking situation.
Legislation punishing the possession of the synthetic drug fentanyl is heading to the governor, but judges won't have a choice on giving mandatory minimum sentences.
Maybe the message could be to our kids, don't use any of the drugs because it may have fentanyl in it.
And our Capitol Reporters Roundtable convenes for one last time during this lawmaking session.
You're not seeing a lot get through these chambers. I think that is partly the directive of leadership.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
Florida lawmakers are on track to vote on the budget Monday. That makes today the last chance for them to get the remaining bills passed. Kate Payne has this rundown of the Senate's 11th hour deliberations.
With the end of session looming, horse trading is pretty typical, and that can make for some gut-wrenching decisions. One of those bills combines an expanded scholarship for people with disabilities with an expanded voucher program that uses state money for private and religious schools.
This bill doesn't increase the cap on these scholarships at all. All it does is increase the amount of money per child for middle school and high school.
Tampa Republican Senator Dana Young is backing the voucher program, which primarily goes to low-income and minority students. The bill was especially challenging for Democrats, who see school choice as a threat to traditional public schools. Ultimately, the Senate approved the bill 27-11. Another contested bill is a fix to the state's workers' compensation program, which was recently found unconstitutional. Lawmakers want to stabilize rates that are on the rise since the ruling. Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley hoped to strike a compromise with the House.
It's a grand bargain between our state's employers and our state's employees.
But the Senate rejected Bradley's compromise. The chamber adopted Fort Lauderdale Democratic Senator Gary Farmer's plan, which allows for higher attorney's fees.
It makes the rate-making process more transparent so that businesses are going to get a better, hopefully, lower rates.
The change sets the chambers up for another round of disagreements, which means workers' comp reform is likely dead for this year. There is also a lively debate over public school textbooks. Lawmakers want residents to be able to object to books they find inappropriate, not just parents. But Lake Worth Democratic Senator Jeff Clemens worries the bill opens the door to
parents to advocate with their school boards that we should remove language about sexual education, about important events in history, about science.
Supporters of the bill want to beef up the review process and allow more community control. The Senate ultimately voted 19-17 to do just that. But many of these last-minute measures are relatively uncontroversial, allowing the chamber to rattle through page after page of parliamentary procedure. The experience is not unlike an auction, really.
37 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. President.
Show the bill passes. Read the next bill.
Committee substitute for committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 15.
The Senate also voted to print addiction advisory warnings on lottery tickets, similar to those on alcohol and cigarettes. Here's bill sponsor, Republican Senator Keith Perry of Gainesville.
By requiring the words warning, gambling may be addictive, to be printed on the front of all lottery tickets, advertisements, and included on the lottery promotional materials.
The measure is now headed to the governor's desk. Lawmakers also unanimously approved a bill they hope will make the state's vote-by-mail system more accessible. Senators also voted to expand autism training for law enforcement officers. They approved plans to increase penalties for people who commit domestic violence and to create new criminal punishments for terrorism. Put on hold is a plan to let utility companies recoup costs when they invest in fracking. And direct primary care agreements were also sidelined. They would have let patients pay doctors directly instead of through insurance companies. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Florida lawmakers were cracking down on the synthetic opioid fentanyl today. Legislation ramping up punishment for its possession is now headed to Governor Scott, as we hear from Sarah Mueller.
Opioids like heroin and oxycodone kill pain and activate the reward center of the brain. Fentanyl is 50 times more potent than heroin and can cause overdoses and death. But under current law, possessing fentanyl is not a felony. Republican Representative Jim Boyd says his legislation targets drug dealers and traffickers.
Just for context, between 2013 and 2015, Florida medical examiners recorded a 281% increase in fentanyl and a 280% increase in heroin-caused deaths in Florida.
But judges don't have a choice on sentencing under Boyd's measure. Offenders convicted with 4 grams of fentanyl would serve 3 years in prison. People caught with 14 grams would face 15 years and 25 years for 28 grams. An amendment by Senator Randolph Bracey would have allowed the judge to consider criminal history, character, and chance of successful rehabilitation. Democratic Senator Jeff Clemens argued for the amendment.
There are people that do bad things and should be punished for it. But there are also people who do bad things and deserve a second chance. And so if we're going to sit here today and talk about whether or not people should be punished appropriately, why don't we let the judges make those decisions? They're the ones who hear the facts of the case.
Bracey says he removed the mandatory minimum sentencing language in committee, but it was added back.
And the concern was from the sponsor was that the minimum mandatory was applied to more than just fentanyl. It was for all drug trafficking. So what I did was narrowed it to just this substance.
Senator Jeff Brandis says the problem with mandatory sentencing for fentanyl is that it's mixed into other illegal drugs, so someone could possess fentanyl and not know it.
The judges may be able to say, look, this is the first time, and they were caught with some other type of drug. They had no clue what was in it. And all of a sudden, with one extra gram, their penalty went from 15 to 25 years, or from 3 to 15 years. Imagine that. Imagine it's your kids. Imagine you standing up there and asking that judge and him saying, I'm sorry, I can't do anything. Go talk to the prosecutors.
But members of the House and other senators oppose the amendment. Senator Kelly Stargell says her daughter has 2 friends who have died of fentanyl overdoses.
Maybe the message could be to our kids, don't use any of the drugs because it may have fentanyl in it and it may have a stronger amount of drug in it than what you may have anticipated. And guess what? If it does have fentanyl in it, not only might it kill you, but you might also be going to jail for longer than you had intended for the other drug you were using.
Governor Rick Scott declared an opioid state of emergency earlier this week. That allows the state to draw $27 million a year in federal funding for the next 2 years for treatment, prevention, and recovery services. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. A bill creating memorials to remember the boys who died and were buried in unmarked graves on the Dozier School for Boys grounds is now heading to the governor. As Sasha Cordner reports, it's part two of what the Florida legislature is doing to help address the abuses that occurred at the school decades ago.
Over the course of a month, Florida lawmakers have heard horrifying testimony from those who say they survived the abuse at the now-closed Dozier School for Boys, as well as its sister campus, the Okeechobee School. It even moved several lawmakers to tears, including Miami Democratic Representative Cynthia Stafford.
They recall having on nightgowns with blood in the back from the abuse, as well as from the 100 lashes and the 56 lashes that they got, one for just eating a berry off of a bush because he was hungry.
Both chambers of the legislature have apologized to the Dozier survivors, and the Florida House has already passed a bill to memorialize them as well as those who died due to the abuse. A few years ago, University of South Florida researchers unearthed 55 remains, hoping to match them with their living descendants. While several have been DNA matched, others remain unclaimed. And Stafford says it's important to remember what happened so it doesn't happen again.
We commit to establish and have those monuments so that we will never forget.
Stafford is co-sponsoring the measure alongside Tampa Republican Representative Sean Harrison. He says the bill follows the recommendations of the Dozier Task Force, which met last year.
Unidentified or unclaimed remains should be reinterred in Tallahassee with a location to be determined by DMS in an appropriate location and with the graves to be clearly marked. And two memorials should be established, one on the Dozier property in Jackson County and one in Tallahassee, dedicated to the memories of the boys who lived and died at Dozier School, as well as the 1914 dormitory fire victims.
In 1914, a dorm fire occurred, so the bill allows for the remains of those who perished in the fire to not only be reburied back on the Dozier grounds, it also memorializes the fire victims. The creation of the memorials as well as the reburial of the unclaimed remains are expected to cost $1.2 million. The Dozier White House building, where survivors say a lot of the abuse occurred, and the Boot Hill Cemetery, where the remains were found, would also remain intact. And the measure also allows for researchers to find more remains if need be. While the bill passed the House unanimously a few weeks ago, there was no Senate companion, and days after that vote, the House measure was later referred to a Senate committee, which never took up the bill, even in the last week of session. So the fate of the bill was in doubt, but in a procedural move, the House measure was taken up on the Senate floor Friday, and St. Petersburg Democratic Senator Daryl Rusan, who had sponsored the formal apology, says he's grateful.
Not only have we done a resolution this session that apologizes for the atrocities that occurred, we have also taken a further step and authorized an appropriation to give a respectful burial to the unidentified, unclaimed remains, not only from the fire, but from other deaths that occurred there at the property. Thank you, Mr. President, for this opportunity.
Rusan had wanted to direct the Department of Environmental Protection to assess the toxicity of the Dozier property and clean it up before handing it over to Jackson County. Researchers had found arsenic in the grounds and asbestos in the buildings, but he withdrew that change so the bill wouldn't be jeopardized. And with the House and Senate's unanimous passage, the measure now heads to Governor Rick Scott. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
For the final time in the 2017 Florida lawmaking session, the Capitol Reporters Roundtable convenes. We already heard that we have a budget, but now we have a time certain for lawmakers to reconvene on Monday and pass the budget. And Lynn Hatter, what time is that?
2:43 p.m. That is the earliest that they can vote on this.
What else is going on, Lynn?
We have questions about where certain proposals are going. Where is Speaker Corcoran's Schools of Hope proposal going? Still don't know where in the budget that's going to be. We still don't know what's going to happen to a testing bill. We don't know what's going to happen to a recess bill. And here we are at Friday at about 3:30, and a lot of stuff still up in the air.
Okay, from your angle, Nick, we talked yesterday about some of the things that were impeding the budget, but that's a done deal. Now what?
One of the things that that's leaving this whole thing sort of half-baked is that conforming bills only have to wait 24 hours. Like the budget itself, you have to wait 72. Typically, every year we have like a last-minute addition of special projects, you know, all this sprinkle list of funding. And one of the things that is unique now is we can spend the next few weeks going through and looking at all of the projects that they decided to fund, all those things that they added in at the end, because House Speaker Richard Corcoran did demand that everybody file a bill. So there will be some double checking, but you're right. Even that is sort of a fig leaf in comparison to how opaque this process has been.
You know, when it comes to transparency, you did have this promise that this was going to be a very transparent process. And, you know, despite what the House Speaker says, I think a lot of people would argue when you're striking deals behind the scenes, when you're making trade-offs between state employee pay raises and state employee retirement and state employee health insurance behind the scenes, that's not transparent. And that's exactly what happened.
You know, Speaker Corcoran very exuberantly made sure that all of the local spending projects were delineated, were fought for just as separate pieces of legislation, made it very easy to track. However, when it came time to the discretionary spending that most of the legislature has, you know, entire silos of the budget, like the general government appropriations, were decided behind closed doors. So that translates to an awful lot of policy that was being made outside of the sunshine. So it can be confusing unless you follow the process very closely or pay attention 24 hours a day.
Well, speaking of sunshine, one thing that may not see the sunshine, Regan McCarthy, is any kind of a gambling compromise out of this particular lawmaking session, but lots of other things, too, did not see the light of day.
You know, we're talking about a lot of sort of squishy stuff right now that potentially could change. One thing I can tell you is there is no sweeping gambling overhaul bill this session. It's not coming out. Lawmakers called those talks off earlier this week. They're still leaving a few doors open where maybe we could get some things coming up here. They're trying to find some bills to amend various provisions onto those. But at this point, with things moving so quickly, adding an amendment to a bill in either chamber really decreases the likelihood that that bill will make it to the governor, because that means it has to go back to the original chamber it came from, and the two sides have to agree. And really, we're running out of time for that to happen. So I think largely a lot of Florida's gambling future will depend on the courts. I know that Representative Jose Diaz, who was leading the process in the House, said that earlier this week, that, you know, we're waiting for a gaming ruling from the Florida Supreme Court relating to parimutuel slot machines for eight counties that held referendums supporting those slot machines. And depending on how that ruling comes out, Diaz says there's a possibility that would be a reason for a special session to sort of work around that and make sure they keep it within the parameters that they're comfortable with. But it's still to be seen how that will come out.
Well, and a special session on workers' comp, Jim Ash?
It might be too early to predict that. However, the legislature is going to be under a lot of pressure to act. A lot of the fight centered on capping attorneys' fees. The Senate had a much more liberal policy that would have allowed judges of compensation claims to depart at up to $250 an hour. The House version was $150. In the end, the House was willing to come up to $180. But there was so much of that legislation that was being driven by the House. They were insisting, for example, on dramatically lowering payments to hospitals in workers' comp cases that the Senate just really couldn't stomach. It's been a couple of decades since any comprehensive workers' compensation legislation passed, and it's always required a special session.
And this sort of like last-minute bartering for a lot of policy bills can be a death sentence. I mean, like what we've been saying, we're really running out of time. Now, today we saw that the fight over mandatory minimums for fentanyl possession, that really could have derailed that bill. But the Senate agreed to peel off an amendment that they had originally tacked on to make sure that that bill went ahead and the legislature didn't look as though it was doing nothing while Florida deals with a massive opioid crisis. Similarly, we have medical marijuana that is sort of hanging in the balance, right? The Senate and the House can't seem to agree about whether they want to cap the amount of storefronts a licensed dispensary can have. And right now, the two champions of those bills are locked in a tug of war over who's going to be able to get this through. And we'll see. You know, John Morgan, the guy who pushed the amendment in the first place, seems ready to take this to court over provisions making smoking illegal. And so while lawmakers are fighting over this one thing, just like gambling, we could go right back into the courts.
Very few bills in general have gotten through this session.
By noon today, it was 170.
Exactly. And keep in mind, that compares to like 1,000 bills in previous years. You're not seeing a lot get through these chambers. I think that that is partly the directive of leadership. Mm-hmm. House Speaker Richard Corcoran has preached an overall conservative philosophy at the beginning of session. Senate President Joe Negron said that his chamber was going to be the more conservative chamber. It's kind of strange to see two chambers kind of battling for who's the most conservative here when both are run by Republicans, but I digress. But you're not seeing a lot go through. Here we are, day 60. After today, you know, if they can't get those bills out, they die at midnight.
And the other thing that's sort of interesting here is that Governor Scott gets to basically have his cake and eat it too, because he gets to hold the threat of the veto over lawmakers to see if he can wring whatever little policy wins he can out of them. And granted, he hasn't gotten many. But he also gets a dry run for a potential Senate bid in 2018.
And think how many things we can talk about between now and either the next special session or when we kick into election mode, which will be coming up in 2018. Guys, great job during the 2017 session. Lynn Hatter, Nick Evans, Jim Ash, Regan McCarthy. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Tom.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FBRCapReport. On Monday, lawmakers will return to Tallahassee to approve the state budget. We return to our weekly Capitol Report schedule next week. But in the weeks to come, we'll be looking at the budget and other decisions made during the legislative session and letting you know what it means and who it affects. Thanks for listening throughout session, and please join us next week at this time for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com, and from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.